Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the China Shop, home of the Arizona Wildcats. I am Kyle, and joining me is Baba Yaga, president of the Lute Olson Fan Club, Carolina chapter. Flary, our honorary CEO, and Bear Goes Long is standing by in case one of us needs resuscitation after this intro. Honestly, I didn't think, Baba, you'd let me make it this far, so I kind of stopped writing after that part. So
I'm respectful, you know?
Who's your favorite Wildcat?
I don't have one. Actually, we have a mounted. We have a wildcat mounted in the man cave at my dad's house. So. Nice.
Who are the Wildcats? Is that like a professional team?
So we found out that Baba is a big fan of Duke. I did not know that. I grew up in Arizona and was a Wildcats fan, and there's a little bit of bad blood between the two teams.
Yeah, I sent Kyle a picture from the entrance to Cameron Indoor Stadium of the national championship where we beat Arizona's
2001.
Circle 01.
You know nice. the worst part about that year is that's the year Lute Olson's wife died and the players dedicated the entire season to her.
Well, they came up short.
Yeah. Yeah. Last game of the season.
tough look. You hate to see it.
So how was the Duke game, dude? You went to one this week, didn't you? Or last week?
We did New Year. We spent New Year's Eve and New Year's part of New Year's Day in I'm gonna switch hats now. In what do you call it? Raleigh, Durham area?
Burns too much.
it's just a little vibrant for my taste.
A little too heavy.
We spent, yeah, so it was awesome, dude. It was a lot of fun. I've never been to a game there. We randomly decided a few weeks back that it's something like we should do. Like we were coming through that area and stopped at the campus, looked around, went to Cameron Indoor. Obviously, we couldn't get in, but we peeked through the windows and we're like, dude, we should. Why have we never been to a game? Let's go to a game. So
you're just there and just like, hey, we'll go to a game. Why not?
Well, yeah, we had to book, you know, get the tickets sorted out. Like we didn't go that day.
Yeah. Okay.
But we talked about the plan, and my wife, being the planning wizard that she is, got it worked out. So
nice. Anybody else do anything fun this week or past week? Flary, I heard you've been wiping up the floors in the local poker halls.
Yeah. Just. I mean, so for the last 2 years, I've taken this 2 weeks as like my full market decompress. Like almost, I would say I'm not even looking at charts. That'd be a lie. You know, just like certainly not trading. And this week or this last week is specifically has been like really a test of that because the markets have been moving a bunch. But yeah, just trying to take this time as like a decompress, a reset. You know, 2025 goals, planning. What kind of stuff I want to do, and typically just avoiding like relatively low vol markets and grinds on low vol and stuff like that. And I honestly don't even know if the volume has been up or if it's just been low vol like moves, just not a grind. But yeah, so just been taking some time off, hanging out with the family, been playing a lot of poker, crushing the local mixed games.
What's the mixed game?
Mixed games is like playing more than just no limit hold'em. So it's mixture of games that you play in a circuit. So like every 6 to 8 hands, you rotate games.
That's tough.
So yeah, just been picking it up. I think locally the mixed games, they have a bunch of games that run. It goes from like 10, 20. So their limit. So it goes from like 10, 20, 20, 40, 40, 80, and 50, 100. But my like inkling, my prediction is that will be where the biggest winners locally come out of in cash. So trying to spend some time just sharpening the skills of those games, because I mean most people don't know how to play them. So if you're even like average, I think there's a lot of money to be made. So it's just an avenue I'm exploring there, and it's gone well over the break and the hiatus, and still have the iron in the flames for a bunch of you know, food service type stuff that we're working on. And yeah, excited. Honestly, I've missed it. So excited to get back. I don't know if it's just watching the market move and just being like, I'm not trading.
Or has Baba been sending you screenshots the last couple of days?
Oh, man, so many screenshots. Sorry. Oh, did you see that Banger Perfect setup? And I'm like, God damn it. Like, yes, I saw it. Like, I'm Thank trying to tell you I didn't.
This is a triple plus setup.
I know, right? It always is when you're just watching or not even looking. But, yeah, excited to get back to the markets. Gonna come back in or ease back in Monday. And, yeah, so most of December was just, like, options and – personal account and still licking the wounds of, you know, the whole prop market is kind of jacked right now, which maybe we can talk about that, but yeah.
I was gonna say, were you cashing in on Mung or any of those other shit coins?
Honestly, I was it's so funny, like I ended up like in a big rabbit hole of like meme coins, and Bear, you can probably test this because you were in some of those chats. Really was trading some things I won't be proud to disclose, like just like the weirdest meme coins and stuff like that, and it did okay. But yeah, got bent over on a few, did well, like crazy stupid good on a few that paid for all the bad ones, and there's more bad ones than good ones kind of thing. But yeah, it's just been an odd trading December, but that by plan. So excited to get kind of back to the normal, you know, here's my boring five setups and wait for them to hit.
Are you still talking to the fellows at the Gelber breakout, the guys from your pod?
I have a few times, maybe there's a follow-up episode there, but
I got another guy from a different pod that was interested in coming on and doing one. He was trying to get some other guys from his group, but I don't know if he's going to be able to fill or get enough people to do that, so I don't know if maybe Kevin or one of those other guys wants to jump in with us and
just like post contest, like how it's affected trading and things like that. Like I, you know, obviously it didn't pan out with sort of the needs of, you know, relocating families to New York and stuff like that as would have hoped. But easily one of the biggest, if not the biggest learning, maybe not like the biggest learning from like a raw edge perspective in trading journey, but like one of the most notable experiences in trading so far as like aha-ish type moments and just like, you know, that little peek behind the curtain, if you will. So yeah, I'm happy to continue to chat about that too.
Probably doesn't happen very often where you're not the best trader in a room. So the opportunities to learn from the people around you.
I mean, dude, by far. Yeah. And just to see like, just to see so many different strategies and guys that were just like purely mathematical, guys that were purely feel, guys that were trading nothing but spreads and, you know, just like stuff that, you know, like, I mean, unless somebody shows you, I guess, how do you really, I guess you find a book or something, but to see people actually executing those strategies and, you know, what that, the equity curves looked like on some of that stuff. And me, I'm just like firing shots in NQ on horizontal lines and somehow managed to find my way through. You know, it's funny. You don't get a job, but you make like, I think I ended up with like 40 grand in profit.
Nice.
Right.
Whatever.
How about you, Bear, man? How was your holiday?
It was good. It was good. I did a lot of trading, not much work. So, you know, I was able to actually fill in a lot of hours with trading and kind of playing the prop game within Top Step and learning how to do a better job of balancing copy trades.
We see it.
But, you know,
Bob is flashing his whiskey bottle.
Yeah,
sorry.
Little Woodford. But yeah, learning how to actually like scale profits, even when you're copy trading. So it was good. I had some really good days and some bad days. And actually took some payouts for the first time in a while. I'd kind of been on this rant. I've been on this kick of going, oh, just build accounts, just build. And then it's like, okay, these are too much video game numbers. I need to make it real. So, you know, took a payout and it was like, okay, cool. But still, it was just kind of numbers. And then this weekend, I'm going to go turn it into a, cabinets and drywall for this new house I'm building. So can't get much more real than that.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Living the dream, right?
I love that, dude. I love spending the money. We've talked about that maybe on here.
Yeah.
A while before. Real. Like, I think that's a big piece of it. Like, if you're going to do this weird, you know, edge gambling type version that trading is, like, when you take the money out, I mean, unless it's all you're doing, right? Which I think most of us have some version of a side hustle, like, or a different full-time job. Like, if you don't take that money and do something with it, if it's like take your family on a vacation or, you know, buy drywall, like, it really makes like the effort real and tangible. You're like, fuck yeah, I worked my ass off and studied stupid charts for way too long and I got drywall instead of whatever that composite board behind me, right? Like, I think it's cool.
Yeah, it's things taste better when you make it yourself, right?
Yeah, the whiskey, dude. I always like whenever I take a good payment, which I try to do every Friday for my account. But like whenever I take a good payment, I always buy like a better bottle of whiskey on the weekend. Like I'll drink like Evan Williams as my everyday sipper, and then I'll go buy something like nice for the weekend. I like that. Congrats, Bear. That's awesome.
Wait. I thought Evan's Williams came out the best on the blind taste test.
It did. I guess that's just because I drink it all the time. But well, listen, like Evan Williams is a quality distillery, so it's just not. Yeah.
I'll drink it. I'm just really enjoying this.
Bro, you drink white fucking juice from a jar, a mason jar. Don't do it. Listen. I really like moonshine. I've had lots of great moonshine.
Look, here's the deal. I know lots of great moonshine I purchased was out of the back of a vehicle, like literally out of the trunk of a car. So, I mean,
it's the same place I get my milk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, to each his own, brother. I have two, like a couple. A question and then like an update. This afternoon. We went and loaded up a bunch of stuff hurricane stuff from the shipment of from our homie to the bottom here. So it was just really fun to get a phone call or somebody was like, hey, here's some stuff that we're running low on, and be like, okay, let me go see what we got laying in there and like, you know, crawl through boxes or whatever. That stuff, that's still like a thing. It's still a real, you know, part of life down here for some people.
How are you guys doing on supplies?
Really, really good. Because we got a lot, we got a lot.
So 26 pallets. Doesn't sound like a lot. And then you're like,
and then it's even like finding. So like when you store, you have to strategically store them because like you need to be able to find the macaroni and cheese pallet. Sometimes, but then sometimes you need to be able to get to the ramen palette and maybe the Dr. Pepper palette stacked on top of the, I don't know, Pedialyte palette. So you see what I'm saying? It's like, it's funny, but.
You had a Dr. Pepper palette?
We do. We have a Diet Pepsi palette. We have a Coke Zero palette. And here's what's funny. We hadn't done a lot with drinks. There's probably four pallets or so of drinks ish, like plus or minus. We hadn't really done much with that because like, I don't know who needs like soda in a crisis, but that was actually one of the specific things that was asked about like this coming into this weekend was like drinks. Hey, we like sports drinks like Gatorades and also just like regular drinks, like sodas, whatever you guys call it, pop, where you guys are from. And I was like, oh my God, we have so much of that. How cool. Right. So shout out. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Just an update for people that may be interested. But we have like a lot of stuff. So but that was the plan.
Helped with that
too. Was the plan, like to have stuff when people are not excited about it anymore.
Right. Right.
So being able to
because you get that first initial burst and then it just dies.
And we've taken we've taken other stuff, other van loads of stuff and other loads from that, but now I feel like it's like into that like pace of like, here's some more things we need without overwhelming. Like that's the other part is like, oh, well, I could put it all in a flatbed and like show up with it. But that's like overwhelming. So it's better to like load like two vehicles or a vehicle, like my truck or whatever, and just like take that. So
you said
I had two things. That was the one like serious update. The question was, Bear said something like he said something about scaling. He'd been scaling something, scaling profits or scaling something. What are you talking about?
So I'm copy trading multiple accounts. So like Top Step lets you copy trade 5 accounts at the same time. And one of the things that I started experimenting with and got to really like is that Topshop lets you set like a profit target. And if you hit that profit target, it hard locks the account for the rest of the day. And so rather than like trying to copy trade 3, 4, 5 accounts at the same time, what I started doing is at the beginning of the day, I would send each account in a different profit target. So, you know, like one account's at 450, one's at 900, one's at 1350. And basically what it would do is as I went up in profit, my accounts would like peel out. But even more than that, they would lock it. And so, you know, like the primary account that I was trading, if I, you know, went over that stupid limit and I started tilting and I gave the day back, I only gave the day back on one account, not 5 accounts.
Hmm.
Or, you know, however many accounts I was trading. And it was just a whole different approach than I thought about ever doing. Because naturally, when you go in with, you know, copy trading, your mind says, oh, greed, maximize. You know, I want to, you know, have a $10,000 day on 5 accounts. Well, that's not realistic. And it's been really interesting. And so I've got one account that it consistently locks. You know, sometimes I'll manually lock it at like just over that $200 limit, but it's default is 450, and that's my most consistent account because that's like the lowest point where, you know, if I start to have an upswing in a day, I'll get into there, and then sometimes I'll trend back down, and so on the day history, that's the one that has like I want to say like 2 or 3 losing days out of 15. So it's just interesting. But you know, it's just different ways to play with my psychology and see what's triggering my emotions. So it's good.
Okay, so it sounds like you found a trigger is like actually making too much in a day to where if you hit a certain threshold, then you tend to give it back.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Man, stats are cool, aren't they?
and you know, and like, you know, and psychology stuff too, you know, I got a lot of stuff going on in my personal life, and so I was like super stressed out like New Year's Eve, and I was trading to avoid some shit, and I was trading really well, and you know, fortunately all my accounts locked out except for the big one I was trading, and I got up like $2,800, and I'm like, oh dude, this is awesome. You know, this is going to be freaking amazing. And then I just went on full winner's tilt and gave it all back. And it was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I need to actually go deal with my personal bullshit. And I did. And it was good. But it was like, you know, it's one of those, you look back in hindsight and it's like, God, it was dumb. Now the upside of that is I actually pulled my 16-year-old. I talked to him about some of the psychology stuff.
Yep.
Because then the next day I was in a similar boat of, you know, I was up like, you know, my first trade just boom, 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 you know, flew up there like 35, 40 points. And I'm like, whoa, wow, that's awesome. You know, check some other accounts. It's like, cool, locked out, good. And then in this other account, because I was also copy trading an eval. So the eval's got the $1,500 target. And so I'm sitting here and I'm, you know, I got a count up, I went down, I got it up, and I'm like, you know, that's a pretty good day. I really should lock this out. And I'm like, you know, I could lock my funded account and only trade the prop. And it's like, I want to do it, man. I want to do it. Go for that 1500. And even my son said, he's like, dude, I think it was the goal that screwed you up because you were sitting there aiming for the goal. Rather than trying to aim for the good trades. And I'm like, damn it.
You're so smart.
Man, is everybody's kid just good traders? Baba, your kid's been crushing it. Hey, Larry, your kid's been pretty good.
Oh, market up, down, up. Market go up.
Yeah.
Up, down, kangaroo podcast. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, he's sitting at...
no way.
What, like $700 or $900 for the month of December on his own?
God yeah.
$700 to $900. So I don't remember which. Not $7,900. seven or nine. Yeah. I have
still,
not.
Almost actually, a grand.
Yeah, I watched him, actually watched him, like he was taking a trade. I think I sent it to you, Kyle, or maybe it was J-Mac.
I was like, I don't really like this.
He's taking this trade right now. Like a screenshot or took a picture from behind him. He's sitting at the desk. I haven't said anything about like no advice, no anything. I've just opened it. And whenever he says, hey, is the market open right now? And I'll say, yeah. And he's like, I think I want to trade. And he'll just sit down and he'll usually, honestly, dude, he'd like sits here for like 2 minutes and then he's in a trade. And
oh, wow.
And then he made his little $200 the other day. And then I was like, are you done? Or he's like, actually, he put the trade on, left the room, went to jump on the trampoline, had his targets and stops, and came back, and one of them had filled, and he looked at it, and he moved the other one up, and he was like, if it touches that, I'll be out with $200, right? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, okay, that's fine. I'm going to go do something else. And then he just left again. He got stopped out. He came back. He was like, Do I have $200? I was like, yeah. He's like, well, I figure as long as I have like $100 or $200 for a day, that's probably enough. Well, I'm gonna go do something else. And he like, you know, I think it's hilarious.
Dude, awesome.
Is he trading micros or minis?
Micros, dude.
Okay, good.
But $900 on micros? That's insane. I mean, know. Or $750. I can actually see what it is. But yeah, I mean, like, kudos to him. I think it's cool. It's a good use of.
So what's standing out when you're watching him trade? What's he doing that other people should be trying to do?
Buying highs and selling lows.
Do you think it's what he's doing?
I think
is
what he does is looks at it and says to himself, which way is it going? I mean, Momo. As simply as.
So he's a trend trader?
I think he just looks at, I mean.
Momo.
I've
Momo
asked trend. Him to talk about it, and it's really just. He'll say, well, they went up a lot and they pulled back, but they only pulled back a little bit. So probably going to go higher. So
not bad.
And
I mean, he doesn't like he looks at I don't even know what his I can't even log in to see it. Whatever.
What does he consider a little bit, like a 25% pullback?
He zooms pretty far out and looks at it.
Okay.
Put up like a 5 minute chart, zooms it way out, squishes it all up, then stretches it back out. And then he's like,
Is it 5 minute chart?
Yeah. And then when he trades, he gets down on like a he gets down on like a 1 minute or 30 second when he's taking an entry. But he did all that he decided that himself.
He learned all that himself.
He's following in his dad's footsteps.
Of course he is.
He's doing. I mean, it's gonna be fun. It's really cool. And the funny thing is, Kyle, I think actually the thing about what he's doing, and probably all of you guys would agree, what he doesn't feel is any pressure to do anything any day or any week, even.
Super strength right there.
So he
God, write that down. Awesome. Write that
he doesn't
down.
Really. It's like when he looks at it, and it's not the predominant thing in his mind or life or goals or anything really. You know, like he's got a basketball game tomorrow. He's way more excited about than trading today. So he did. I asked him. He was like, "You want to trade today?" He's like, "No. I'm going to go play on the trampoline." I'm like, all right, sounds good.
I'm on the trampoline like, what's that NASDAQ doing?
Wait till he gets that first payout and we'll see if that changes.
He can buy his own trampoline.
I think he's traded, I don't know. I need to look and see in December how many days, but I mean, it's less than 10.
Yeah. He's not. So if he goes in, he's not trading every day. If he doesn't like what he sees.
Now, he did start trading. He was trading bigger size. He made about $400 or $500 trade in like one day trade minis, and then I was like, hey bud, you need to trade smaller or you're gonna run out of have a bad day and not have any fun anymore. So he switched to micros after that. So now is like good days, you know, $100, $200.
All right, so let me just recap here then. So if we want to trade like your son, join a basketball team and not care about trading,
jump on the trampoline, free time.
Start with 5 minute chart, large wide view, so that way you can see everything, and down to the 1 minute when you want to, you know, execute, and then size up for the big payday.
I guess that sounds about right.
Wait, you forgot, put on the trade, set your stop your target, and leave.
go do
go jump on the trampoline.
He will not sit here and just watch it. Like once he gets a trade that lasts for a couple minutes and it's moved away from where his entry is, he doesn't usually move his stop to break even. Sometimes he will, but after he scales one, he'll move his stop up and then he just then he leaves the disc. I mean, and really, if you think about it, like unless you're planning to continue to scale in, there really isn't anything else you can do other than like if you get a big red light, like freight train, look out, get the freak out of here. But
for me, you can close out a runner, you know, like halfway before it actually hits the point where you should be closing it out.
About 150 well, points early
to a lot of people today. Right. I have to say most of the fun happened today after we finished, which was unfortunate.
It was not during M period.
Dude, I locked out my freaking accounts at before the end of A period. I locked out and put in my payout request. I'm like, Friday, done.
Ah, that's a good Friday. And then
M period was a freight train of stupidity and pain. Ooh, my practice account took
you didn't sim, right?
Yeah, my practice account. Yeah. Man, my practice account took the full goatee there.
I closed out. I think I had 11.5 points on ES and like 92 on YM. I was like, I don't know if it's going to be enough.
So over this break, I guess like I know I took time off. Larry's been taking time off.
Yeah.
Bear, you take any time off?
Not really.
Kyle, you took some time off?
Yeah, I took at least a solid week and a half of not looking at anything.
What were some of the – so did you do anything during that time trade-related or – research related? Did you use that time in any like what do you do when you take time off of trading?
Well, I'll tell you what I did just because it'll be quick. But the first week was just the nothing, decompressed. Don't even look at the charts. I didn't even want to get up when the markets are open. I sleep in, enjoy, you know, some time away from it. And then this past week, I spent basically replaying every morning while everybody else was trading. So I replayed for a good 3-4 hours each morning. Just to kind of get the process back to kind of dialed into where I want it for when I'm ready to hit the ground running on the new year, Monday.
Monday. Bear, you just kept chugging along.
Why didn't you take any time off?
Because I took a lot of time off on my day job, and you know, so I was taking time off of that, and I was working on the house and kind of doing a lot of other things. So I was still popping in, and you know, I was shortening my trading. So, you know, I was trying to keep to my ideal, which is, you know, a trade length of first hour and a half. Actually had a couple of, you know, actually during that time had a couple of really good, you know, night setups where, you know, come in an Asia session and kind of catch a little Momo trend and set my targets and go to bed and wake up and go, cool. Or wake up and go, meh, hit my stop.
I had a couple WURs over the break, you know, a couple of like, oh, Asia looks all right. Let's see how this 10 p.m. candle closes. See if we can't get in on a little something of a pullback and then, you know, set some outlandish targets and go to bed and like wake up and be like, I'm not even going to walk to the computer. I'm just going to remote in from the bed and see where we're at. I think I was 2 for 4. Two nights woke up and I was like, freak, yeah. Two nights woke up and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
50% on sleep trades. I'll take it.
Not bad.
I woke up one morning and I'm like, when did I do that? Oh, yeah. Sweet.
I also had the experience of losing internet and not being sure that my orders were going to be alive to do what they were supposed to do while in a trade. That was cool. That was right at
the end.
You're
on Sierra, aren't you?
Yep.
Then you should have Teton, right?
Yes, it was all server side, thank God. But
yeah. That's why part of the reason why I switched to Teton.
Yeah, I was like, this is probably not going to be good if this is screwed up.
Yes. Their order execution is so good for power outages or, you know, I fell asleep and I didn't know.
It's great. Whatever. It's great. Yeah. That's just a little plug, shameless plug for cash accounts, Teton order routing right there.
It's not even shameless. Teton and Sierra's.
Mm-mm.
A plus.
It's just smart.
Knees.
You hear that, Sierra? Look, some people say bad stuff about you, But we're saying nice things about you, okay?
Don't forget just put that. In the time and figure out the hardest thing to figure out. It's the best. I mean, it's like, it's just so obvious.
Stay away from the support boards.
Yeah, just don't talk to customer service.
Don't ask them for any help. No. But figure it out yourself and you'll be fine and it's the best.
And second to none. And it's great.
God bless them, though.
Cheers to them. Did Flary, did you do anything fun other than play poker?
Yeah, just a bunch of family stuff, Christmas all over the place and all that good stuff.
Pull tabs.
Yeah, just been hanging with the kids. Yeah, pull tabs, poker, pull all tabs. That good stuff. So I hit a $1,000 pull tab the other day. Insane.
Holy crap.
$1,000 pull tab. Yeah, and it was funny. It was a poker related though. So I was playing a poker tournament and I got slow rolled by a kid in the poker tournament, which I went all in. I don't know if you guys don't know what slow rolling is like when you have clearly like a really good hand and you just hem and haw and pretend like you're not going to call. And then you finally call and you just have like the best hand. So that happened to me. And I don't know if he did it on purpose or not, or if he's just like too dense to know he was slow rolling, but it was brutal, dude. I mean, this guy put me in the tank for like 3.5 minutes and calls me with a straight while I just have top pair and kicks me out of the tournament. I was fucking livid. And
did he have a low end straight or
no, he had it. You had the nuts? He had it and was just like, I don't know if he was just like sick and tired of this guy who raises all the time or, you know, like whatever these idiots do. Anyways, so he slow rolls me. And so I just like, I'm a firm believer in the like, you know, casino universe, like some shit like that happens. And the casino has a way of writing it. Like the gambling world is a way of writing that ship. And, so I just went, to the bar, grabbed the Tito's tonic, you know, shout out to Tito's. And, I was like, you know what? Give me $100 in the $5 box. Let's see if this, you know, if the universe will right itself. I shit you not, like two pulls in, I had a $100 winner, which I was already even. And then I had a two-line sweater. And a two-line sweater was guaranteed to be 500 or more. And I pulled all the other tickets I had. Nothing was a winner. And sure enough, man, that baby pulled in. She was $1,000. So I put $100 in and got $1,100 out, which is better than second place money in the tournament. And so fuck that kid. And
a lesson to be learned there? Like, I don't know.
Slow roll people because it's tacky as fuck. And when you get slow rolled or when something bad karma-ish happens to you in the casino, dig into your wallet, find more money, and go put it at risk because something good's about to happen.
And you heard it here first, folks.
I don't even have to say not financial advice because that's not financial advice. That's gambling advice.
It's gambling
advice.
If you're taking
my gambling advice, you're an idiot. So
please listen to the disclaimer.
Sorry. Was that financial advice? It might have been.
No, it's not.
Okay. Good.
Man, we're cool. Good. I think you're good. Right.
Yeah, I think we're okay. Yeah. I think we're okay. We should be okay.
The show is not responsible for the comments of the participants.
Yeah, that might be an important disclaimer. Anyways.
Not gambling advice.
Yeah, that was my pull tab $1,000 hit.
Yeah. All right, let's see. We got a little bit of time left. Should we? Bobby, you've been reading an old book and you've been dropping quotes left and right.
Oh, dude, he sent me did he send you that quote today too?
Yeah.
Oh, he hit me so good today. Yeah. I was like, man, that is solid. I actually shared it with my my mentee.
All right, so the question about what you did over the break was a little bit selfish because I read a bunch. And
look at you, big brain on Baba.
I mean, hey, I had time. some actual reading, some audio books while driving. A lot of driving. Virginia, 7 hours or something. It's insane. 7 hours up, 7 hours back. Back to Raleigh, 4 hours, 4 hours.
Oh, I made that drive. That's not a fun drive.
To my parents' house like 4 times, which is 2 hours every time. My wife's parents' house, hours every time. Anyways, I read I read Tindler's book. I don't remember the name of it. The thing that has like the mental hand history.
Mastering the Mental Game of Trading, I think.
The Mental Game of Trading, sorry. Something like that. Yeah, it's a good book. Highly recommend. Yeah. 10 out of 10, or like 9 out of 10. I mean, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Read some other stuff off trading topic books, and then I read Tom Hogard, who
Best Loser Wins.
I didn't really know much about, but Best Loser Wins. I had read that book before. All these are rereads. I'd read them before, but I read them again. And it's funny how when you read something in like a different season, or when you read something in like just a different space of life, it lands differently. And really, like, if you haven't read The Best Loser Wins, I would summarize it in like a couple of big things that stood out. One, like, they had like 41 million trades that they pulled in from like major brokers in like the UK or whatever. And 65% of those trades that were taken, this is various traders, various products, whatever. I think it's like 65% of those 41 million trades were winners. Whatever, 40 something percent were losers. Hmm. But the losers outsized the winning trades like 2 or 3 to 1. And so as a whole, they lost their shirt. And so his point was like, having an edge that has positive expectancy technically is only part of the, is really only a sliver of the story. You know, how you manage the other part of trading is important, and how you mentally like engage with fear and risk and stuff like that. And I think for me, in this like timeline of my adventure, that like engage, how you engage with risk, but also how you engage with reward.
Yeah.
Both are pretty big. And so the quote that, like, I don't know, I cannot get out of my mind is, he said, he summed it up as like the 90% that fail, right? And it varies. Like, some brokers have over there, I think they have to have it published, like the success rate of traders or whatever. So like it's 70% failure, 75%, 80 up to 90 something percent different brokers. And he said, like, his summation of all of that data and all of those stats is that when people are losing, they're far too hopeful. And when people are winning, they're far too fearful. And I just, like, that just
bumps,
like, resonated with me. And so his take is like, the 90% fail because when they start losing money, when they have their banger morning and they're up a shit ton, they lose a little bit and then they get hopeful. I can make that right back. And then they lose more. I'll be okay. They lose more. They size up. It all while this is all going against them, like their P&L trend is taking a nosedive and they're so hopeful that I'm still thinking clearly this is all going to be fine. Conversely, when you take a banger trade or you're in a banger trade, you're just chomping at the bit to close at the next, get to the next target, get size off. And his kind of contention with all of that is that you should be quite the opposite, that when you're losing, you should actually have much more of a fearful mindset that this might not be one loss. This could snowball into 10 losses. I shouldn't size up. I should be very careful because I am foolish enough to unwind everything, not that I made today, but everything in my account that mm-hmm. could happen. So I need to respect that. You know, I need to actually have more of a timid, fearful outlook when that's happening. When I'm winning, I need to be hopeful that the market is telling me you are on the right side, and I continue to press into that right side as much as I can.
I can hear Macro Tactical's voice in the back of my head. I'm adding maniacally as soon as it starts going my direction.
Yeah, Grega, the guy from the Floor documentary, the guy that was like completely intoxicated and like barefoot with his feet on the piano or whatever, if you guys have seen that. No. He has that quote that's like, most people have it all wrong. When you're winning, you don't bet less, you bet more. There's like mm-hmm. a bunch of GIFs with that guy's face. It's like, bet more. And it also, like, just... for me, that idea has framed up even like the thought of P&L as more of a tool than anything else. And the thought of like big days or winning days or whatever are just, I mean, I've always feel like I've been fairly even keel about great days or bad days. It's just like whatever mm-hmm. happens. But there's something to the idea of like when you're on the right side and things are spooling for you, instead of figuring out how quickly I can get out, I have over the last couple of days tried and really thought a lot about it, then executed in line with with the idea of like leaning or pressing in a responsible way, but being hopeful that like why can't we trade? I mean, I look back at my data, I look back at trading days where, you know, they were good days, and looked at where I closed my last piece of the puzzle or piece of the pie and how much further we went on some of those days. And not in like a regretful, like, I wish I could have held it longer. I was like, at the end of the day, you can hold something as long as you want. Like, what does it matter on the one hand, especially if you have some play or some either structured way or pre-decided, predetermined way of scaling some portion to cover your risk or your original entry or whatever. Like, I want to be surprised at what the market does for me. And the market's not, you know, it doesn't have an attitude like, oh, as soon as he thinks he's good, I'm going to crush his soul. Like, the market's not looking at us that way. I mean, when I went to New York, one of the things that stood out was the incredible amount of money just in the buildings where this type of business takes place. Like, standing beside the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ or whatever. And I thought, dude, I could trade 10 times, 20 times what I'm trading, and I wouldn't be a speck of dust. I wouldn't be a hundredth of a percent of what's happening. No one's noticing. I'm not, there's no target on my back,
right?
You know? And so, like, that's been so inspiring to me. I mean, I'm definitely on a bit of a heater on the trading front right now anyways. And then coming into the first couple of days of January, is like, this morning was slow-ish, but then the afternoon just, you know, kind of uncorked in a really good way. But I wonder, we were having this conversation in Discord a little bit with someone about P&L and, oh, close this much and how do you do da 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 da. And the thought is originated from a place of being worried, you know,
right.
The conversation you can add. I don't want to get on tilt or whatever. And it's like, well, yeah, I don't know. I have been just thinking about it from a like performance and like an efficiency standpoint, you know, like,
yeah.
How do I perform and how efficient can I be with what I'm working with? And like, why not? Like, why not? Why doesn't the market go? We talked about those 80s and the 520s, five somethings. I don't know. I could pull it up, but we talked about that this morning on NQ. 480s and 550s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's like work that had me looking in those two areas, and I wanted to be a part of some kind of move to there, but at a certain point today, it seemed like really unlikely, you know. But once I kind of got positioned for that, man, I just was looking for a way to have more on, you know, like, how can I get some more on? I mean, if we go below where we started this whole journey, then I'm wrong. But as long as we're above that, let's freaking go, you know?
Right.
Like, and why not? Why not be surprised?
So how often do you do that, Bubba? How often do you go back and reread the old books?
Well, I've read Trading in the Zone a lot of times. I listen to some of the same stuff often. I'll reread Tindler's book again this month.
Yeah, it's another good one.
Because I feel like there was more to get out of it. That was the second time through.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just go ahead and read it a third time just because I left the Best Loser Wins so like with a couple of key nuggets that I was able to take them and like make an iteration of them to apply to what I'm doing. And they kind of sparked some good thoughts. And I don't want to say that the Tindler book didn't spark good thoughts, but it definitely bears repeating for me, I think, to really have a couple more little nuggets out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I read Tindler's book basically when it first came out. That was what, like 2.5, 3 years ago?
Yeah, something like that.
And I was really excited to hear you talk about this because I've been thinking about the last few weeks. I was kind of looking at some of these books and going, I am such a completely different person now than even 2 years ago when I read some of these books that I should go back to read them because there's stuff that I will understand now that just went completely over my head.
Yeah. You got another 2 years of experience under your belt. Of course, you're going to pick up something different.
Yeah. And 2 years of psychological and emotional growth and learning. Right. And, you know, now when they start to talk about, you know, like, you know, the euphoria moment.
Like, oh, I know what that means.
Dude, I've experienced that so many times in the last like 6 weeks. And it's funny because, you know, I'll feel it.
And I'm like, oh, that's my euphoria. And it's like, okay, that's my body, the universe, God, everybody saying, lock the freaking account. This is your high watermark. And yeah, the devil on my shoulder going, you could do better. And yeah, let's see who wins.
Flair, what about you, dude? What books have you been, do you like to go back to? Any recommendations for us?
One Good Trade, I've been rereading. So that was a book I read fairly early on in the trading journey. And honestly, it didn't make very much sense. I mean, it made sense logically, but like, it was one of those things where like, I reread it several years later now. And I was like, holy shit, this is what this guy was talking about. So One Good Trade by Mike Belfiore. Or however you say it, Belfiore.
Yeah.
Super good.
Were you the one who put me on to Reminiscences of a Stock Operator? Like the first thing we ever recorded with you?
It was either probably, yeah, maybe. Yeah, either myself or Macro. Yeah.
That's another good one,
but
dude.
That's another good one. Yeah.
That's another
that's a good one.
That is the...
I made my son read that.
That's on the reread list. I read that again this past spring-ish. And then it's actually after I finish Liar's Poker, that's a good one.
It's not more of entertainment, but yeah, good trading book.
But yeah, that one's like a break from the work. That's just a fun novelty type story. Then Reminiscences of a Stock Operator is up next, and then Tim
that's a good story too though.
Yeah, but it's a little practical.
Throw The Biggest Bluff in there. I just listened to that one on audiobook.
Yeah,
that was really good.
Anna something or what's
yeah, name? Yeah, Flurry, we talked about that. Yeah, while we were playing poker.
Yeah, so One Good Trade, just reading that again. There's the Mathematics of Poker, which I just think like that whole like equity EV mindset, game theory, optimal mindset really just translates well to the trading space. So there's some cool stuff in there about like, you know, in poker, it's you play ranges, and trading, you trade setups, and like understanding where you're at, where the market's at, what setups work well, what ranges would work well versus certain opponents. Like there's some really good crossover if you kind of can be open-minded, analytical about it. So there's that. And
what was the name of that one?
Mathematics of Poker. Oh, and so there's a guy on Twitter, Brian Lee Trades. When I was trading like stocks for a bit, he was one of the first people that I really gravitated to. And he has a really cool mindset on two concepts, which I think like the further you go in this, like make just more sense. You know, like all the setup stuff is great and levels and all that shit. But like at the end of the day, it comes down to risk and profit. And he really has a good focus on R. So he trades in R, R values. He's got a whole series of blogs on R, and he just did a whole bunch of new posts. So I went back and read some of his old posts, but he talks a lot about R and then compounding and how, you know, his R value from October, this recent blog, his R value from October, although he took less trades and made less R in December, he actually made more money in December than he made in October. So like, for example, he might've made 75 R in October, but he only made 50 R in December. But because his compounding plan and his risk plan is so well laid out, he actually made more money in December than he did in October. And he just has a really, really good grounded approach to trading your account from an R perspective, which basically is just saying like, dude, you got X amount of dollars, stop being an idiot. And when you plan out your trades, and he, you know, he goes into like R value, when do you size up based on your R for the month, for the week, whatever. And he's got some different things that he talks about strategy wise. But anyways, the whole point is like, how do you manage your account? Like you've got a nut of money to trade. And this, I mean, eval, personal account, you know, you got $1 million, $100,000, doesn't matter. The approach makes sense across all of it. So a really, really good read. And it was kind of the same experience as One Good Trade, going back and reading some of the blogs that I had read like this, like going on like 4 or 5 years ago, just like about the R value and like compounding accounts and not trading outside of your means. And then also like how to allocate multiple R to A plus trades and things like that. And what, like, this guy basically, at the end of the day, the short way to say it is he plays the long game. Mm-hmm. He is not in it for $1,000 today. He's in it for the $10,000 that the same trade makes 2 months from now if he sticks to his plan. And it's just a really good mindset. And the reason I backed up on his stuff was because I'm, you know, sort of mentoring this younger kid who's learning how to trade. And I really, like, he's struggling with risk. And I was like, dude, you got to go read this guy's blog. If you just slowed down and took your time and planned this stuff out, I think you would see, you know, the long game of this, not, you know, I got, you know, I made $2,000 in Top Step today. And it's like, well, great, dude, but you got no payout and, you know, you traded, you know, 95% risk.
Right.
Like, you know, you're levered to the tits, they would say. And
and what's to stop you from blowing it tomorrow?
Right. Well, that's the boom bust that he's been on. So anyways, Brian Lee Trades, and I actually think that's his handle.
I'll make sure to link that.
Brian Lee Trades. But awesome. Yeah, super good stuff on R and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I'll make sure that's linked in there. All the books that were mentioned there, I'll get those added to the Knowledge Center. There's a book recommendations list on there. I've been trying to keep track. Actually, Laura, I should say, has been trying to keep track of all the books that get mentioned on this program. So I'll get that added on there. Throw a link in the description. Anything else, you guys, before we wrap up, or should we call it a show?
I have another thought that I've been thinking about coming into this year, and just also in the transitions that, you know, I've been going through with trading and all this good stuff, is this idea of, like, and I don't know the right words for it. There's probably like a technical term for this, but like, it's in the lines of risk. So like the efficiency side. So I can make, most of the time we take the dollars out of it, we're looking at points, right? Risking these points for these points, whatever, to make, let's say, $1,000. $1,000 in a day with a couple of, even one standard contract or two, there's this risk profile associated with that, right?
Yeah.
And then you take the same concept, let's look at $1,000 in a day trading 4 micros. The risk is so much deflated in that scenario. The notional risk, but also just like the longevity piece. And so I think there's some swimming and diving into that idea, because I think a lot of people, and I think all of these books and all of this stuff is kind of what also kind of prompted my mind in that direction. But a lot of people, I feel, do not consider the amount of size they're using to create a certain result.
Yeah.
And so my contention would be the smallest you can trade and create your desired result is the idea. So like I could trade, I don't know, 10 times what I'm trading or more, but I'm trying to be like as efficient as possible with the risk.
You're trying to create a more steady outcome. With the risk of the minis, our full-size contracts, you're going to have a lot larger variance, I think, between your daily outcomes. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and it comes down to, I feel like one continues to hone a skill set, and then one kind of just chases a number, yeah. Right? I don't know. That's just been such a compelling thought to me, as people ask me about size and stuff a lot, and I think a lot of folks think great trader, huge size,
right? Yeah,
like that's the thought. Or are you trading minis or are you trading micros? You know, it's like, well, that's not really the question. The question is how. So it was prompted from a conversation that I had with an options trader who, you know, is risking significant money to make $1,000 in a day, but we're talking like 10. I mean, his position size is 10 times that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking, oh my God, like my heart is beating fast for you, man. Like, I don't care how much money you have. That just is like so scary. Maybe I'm a punk, but my thought is like, how can we, I don't know. I think I would just love to help foster the thought for people that it is not so much about the dollar amount necessarily. I mean, that matters, but the efficiency is what is scalable.
Baba, do you have any ideas for people who might be, experts willing to talk to us about like that? We can do like a deeper dive into that subject.
I don't. I mean, you know, and I'm not saying you don't. I mean, again, I'm pressing when we're good. Like I'm throwing it on the table, but as far as trading goes and like getting more size on as we're going and all this stuff. But I feel like there's this rush among traders from sim space to regular to like achieve certain numbers without the thought of like the realistic scalability of that. But like you said, according to your variance, like, so I don't know. I don't have any expert. It's just, that's just been like a thing for me for a while. And then rereading all this, it's just been another thing that's bubbled up.
Let's give that some thought. That sounds like a topic that we could probably spend a good hour on if we can get the right people in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll give that some thought, but I think it is probably time to wrap up because we're getting close to an hour and get everybody off to bed. So I'd like to say thank you to Baba, Bear, Flary, Purdue, Joel, Mr. Banks, Cleo, and everybody listening for making this podcast such a joy to make. I hope everybody had a wonderful Festivus, and I hope you're all ready to hit the ground running with us in the new year. And we will be back soon with another exciting episode. But until then, please, for the love of God, give me some better comments to read next year on the YouTube channel and have a green 2025. This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.